Model Test 6.
Section A. Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, 1 or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center. Now, let's begin with the 8 short conversations.
Question 11. I didn't know till recently that Mike was going to move to New York.
That took us all by surprise.
What does the woman say about Mike? Question 12. If it rains on Saturday, the party will be ruined.
What does it matter? We can always hold it indoors.
What are the man and the woman hoping to do? Question 13. How much is the rent?
It's $150 a month, unfurnished, or $200 a month, furnished. Utilities are $25 extra.
How much will it cost to rent an unfurnished apartment, including utilities? Question 14.
Your beer, sir, and lemonade for you, madam. Now, are you ready to order?
It all sounds so good. What do you recommend?
Where does the conversation most probably take place?
Question 15. Have you filled out your tax forms yet?
Don't remind me of them. They're so confusing that I'm discouraged before I start.
How does the woman feel?
Question 16.
But Leo, you're the hotel receptionist.
Well, I'm saving up to study hotel management in Australia. So I work for 5-star tours in my spare time.
What is the man probably working as right now?
Question 17. Why are you so tired and upset?
I've been taking a history course this term, but the trouble is that I'll never get through the reading list. I just don't know whether I could survive the finals.
What does the man imply?
Question 18. Mark was looking for you this morning. He wanted to know if you had decided when to go to the museum, and he seemed quite eager to meet you.
My goodness, I don't know how many times he's talked about it. When did he become such a nagger?
What does the woman mean?
Now you'll hear the two long conversations.
Conversation 1. Hi, Queenie. How are you enjoying yourself at university?
Hi, Jack. It's a lot of work, but I'm having a good time. Are you planning to attend college next year?
Yeah. Can you tell me what facilities they have for disabled students? My wheelchair doesn't always allow me to get into buildings.
You should inquire at Student Services. They can discuss your medical history with you confidentially and make allowances. My friends Shannon and Rosie use computers to do their exams, so in your case, I'm sure it would not be a problem.
What about the wheelchair access?
The newer buildings have elevators and wide doors, but the older buildings have not been upgraded to accommodate handicapped people as far as I know. What faculty are you planning to go into?
I'm thinking of doing engineering.
Engineering is in the old Adams building. I don't know if there is an elevator.
Do the buses that go out to campus have facilities to bring wheelchairs on board?
Yes, that I know for sure. All the buses are equipped with electronic lifts, and there are seats that fold back.
What about the sidewalks?
I think most of the sidewalks have been levelled at the corners, so you could probably use your wheelchair, but I'm not sure. In fact, if you would like, why don't you come with me? I'll be taking the bus and I could show you around once we get there.
That's really nice of you, Queenie. I'd really like that.
Okay, I will come to your house about 8:30 in the morning and we can take the commuter train into the town, then catch the bus up to the university.
Great. I look forward to it.
Questions 19 to 22 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 19. What would the student services do with the man?
Question 20. What are the differences between the new teaching buildings and the old ones?
Question 21. What is the feature of the buses that go to the campus?
Question 22. What's the purpose of Queenie's appointment with Jack?
Conversation 2.
Hey, Don. Did you ever want to be a doctor when you were a kid?
Yeah. I always wanted to be a surgeon.
So, what happened?
I'm afraid of blood. Plus, it's a lot of pressure having someone's life in your hands. I mean, one mistake and you can kill someone.
Right. But you know there are things surgeons can do to cut down on mistakes. For instance, warming up before operating.
You mean warming up by a procedure or something?
Not exactly, but sort of. Most of the time, surgeons prepare for surgery by going over the case and thinking about the procedure. But studies have shown that warming up by actually practicing the procedure or going through the hand motions of the surgery really helps. In one study, doctors that warmed up this way had 80% fewer errors than doctors who didn't warm up.
Wow. So how? Can the surgeons be practiced on a computer simulator or something?
Exactly. Many hospitals have simulators, but they're usually tucked away in a classroom or in the basement. But if there were a practice simulator near the operating room, more surgeons could take a few minutes to warm up and perform better during the real thing.
Cool. If I knew about this, maybe I would have become a surgeon.
Maybe.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 23.
Why didn't the man become a surgeon, according to the conversation?
Question 24.
How do surgeons prepare for surgery usually?
Question 25.
What does the woman suggest hospitals should do?
Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. So, as Jim said, James Polk was the 11th president. And, well, my report's about the next president, Zachary Taylor. Taylor was elected in 1849. It's surprising because he was the first president who didn't have any previous political experience. The main reason he was chosen as a candidate was because he was a war hero. In the army, his men called him Old Rough and Ready. I guess that was because of his rough edges. He was kind of blunt and didn't look like a military hero. He liked to do things like wearing civilian clothes instead of uniform, even in battle. And he was so short and plump that he had to be lifted up onto his horse. But he did win a lot of battles, and he became more and more popular. So the Whig Party decided to nominate him for the presidency, even though no one knew anything about where he stood on the issues. I couldn't find much about his accomplishments, probably because he was only in office about a year and a half before he died. But one thing he pushed for was the development of transcontinental railroads, because he thought it was important to form a link with the West Coast. There was a lot of wealth in California and Oregon from commerce and minerals and stuff. Also, he established an agricultural bureau in the Department of the Interior and promoted more government aid to agriculture. Well, that's about all I found. Like I said, he died in office in 1850, so his vice president took over. And that's the next report. So thank you.
Questions 26 to 29 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 26.
According to the speaker, why is it surprising that Taylor was elected president? Question 27.
Why was Zachary Taylor chosen by his party as a candidate for president? Question 28. Why did Taylor accomplish relatively little as president?
Question 29. What will the class probably do next?
Passage 2. During a state of deep relaxation, several physiological changes take place in the body. The body's oxygen consumption is reduced, the heartbeat decreases, muscle tension and sweating ease, and there is decreased sympathetic nervous system activity. This restful state not only allows the body to repair and restore itself, but it has a calming effect on the consciousness. How to achieve this state of relaxation, however, is a matter of opinion. A recent report by Dr. David Holmes of the University of Kansas in the journal American Psychologist said that simply sitting in an armchair has just as many beneficial characteristics for the body as meditation does. Researchers of other relaxation techniques disagree. These experts believe that more structured techniques, such as meditation, lead to a condition of deep relaxation. The debate goes on, but one thing appears to be clear. The relaxation response can be reached by a number of methods, and the methods themselves are not as important as getting there. One day, one method may work best. On another day, an alternative method may be more appropriate. Once you are aware of all the methods, you can find the one that works best for you. Some of the relaxation techniques are meditation, self-analysis, and progressive muscle relaxation. Although these techniques may not, in the end, produce more of a relaxation response than just sitting quietly in a chair, they have the added benefit of structure and discipline, and for these reasons, appear to be more effective for most individuals.
Questions 30 to 32 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 30. What will happen when a person is in a state of deep relaxation?
Question 31. What did Dr. David Holmes say about relaxation in American Psychologist?
Question 32. What do the opponents of Dr. David Holmes believe? Passage 3.
The Pell Grant Program on today's Congressional Moment. The term Pell Grant becomes very familiar to millions of college-age students and their families every year. Pell Grants assist undergraduate low- and middle-income college students with tuition assistance grants that do not have to be repaid. In addition, the program encourages low-income adults to return to school and, in doing so, promotes lifelong learning. The primary sponsor of the Pell Grant program was Rhode Island Senator Claiborne Pell, who served in the Senate for 36 years. Himself the product of the nation's finest private schools, Senator Pell took a particular interest in the problems that many low- and middle-income students were having in affording college. As the baby boom generation entered college in the late 1960s, the college population swelled, straining college-based financial aid. Eliminating these barriers became an important priority for Claiborne Pell. His concerns were addressed by amendments in 1972 to the Higher Education Act, originally known as Basic Educational Opportunity Grants. Congress renamed them Pell Grants in 1980, to honor the efforts of Claiborne Pell in creating them. Assisting one in every four undergraduates, the Pell Grant Program is now the federal government's largest grant program.
Questions 33 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 33.
Which of the following statements is not correct about Pell Grant?
Question 34.
What happened in the late 1960s that urged Claiborne Pell to sponsor his grant?
Question 35. How many undergraduates get Pell Grant annually?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 36 to 43 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now, listen to the passage.
As the popular slogan states, reading is fundamental. But for many kids with dyslexia, learning to read is a struggle. Simply put, children with reading disorders have trouble recognizing words and letters on the page. And although reading difficulty has been studied for over 100 years, scientists have never determined a specific cause. Over the past 20 years, however, researchers have made significant strides. Many agree that the disorder can be best explained by understanding the mechanics of reading. When a child learns to read, she begins to associate the shapes of letters with sounds and then strings the sounds together to form words. When a learning reader sees the letters C-A-T on the page, she begins by recognizing that the letter C makes a K sound, A makes an R sound, and so on. These basic sounds are called phonemes, and the ability to manipulate them is called phonological awareness. Many researchers now believe that for children with reading disorders, the problem has to do with impaired phonological awareness. Such children may know what a cat is and be able to describe it in detail, but when it comes to sounding out the written word cat, the parts of their brains responsible for processing phonemes just don't work as well as they should. Many reading disorders seem to have nothing to do with intelligence. Albert Einstein was dyslexic, and he turned out to be pretty bright. The good news is that, with proper training, nearly all children can learn to read with proficiency, and that, as we know, is fundamental.
Now the passage will be read again.
As the popular slogan states, reading is fundamental, but for many kids with dyslexia, learning to read is a struggle. Simply put, children with reading disorders have trouble recognizing words and letters on the page. And although reading difficulty has been studied for over 100 years, scientists have never determined a specific cause. Over the past 20 years, however, researchers have made significant strides. Many agree that the disorder can be best explained by understanding the mechanics of reading. When a child learns to read, she begins to associate the shapes of letters with sounds and then strings the sounds together to form words. When a learning reader sees the letters C-A-T on the page, she begins by recognizing that the letter C makes a K sound, A makes an R sound, and so on. These basic sounds are called phonemes, and the ability to manipulate them is called phonological awareness. Many researchers now believe that for children with reading disorders, The problem has to do with impaired phonological awareness. Such children may know what a cat is and be able to describe it in detail, but when it comes to sounding out the written word cat, the parts of their brains responsible for processing phonemes just don't work as well as they should. Many reading disorders seem to have nothing to do with intelligence. Albert Einstein was dyslexic, and he turned out to be pretty bright. The good news is that, with proper training, nearly all children can learn to read with proficiency. And that, as we know, is fundamental.
Now the passage will be read for the third time.
As the popular slogan states, reading is fundamental. But for many kids with dyslexia, learning to read is a struggle. Simply put, children with reading disorders have trouble recognizing words and letters on the page. And although reading difficulty has been studied for over 100 years, scientists have never determined a specific cause. Over the past 20 years, however, researchers have made significant strides. Many agree that the disorder can be best explained by understanding the mechanics of reading. When a child learns to read, she begins to associate the shapes of letters with sounds, and then strings the sounds together to form words. When a learning reader sees the letters C-A-T on the page, she begins by recognizing that the letter C makes a K sound, A makes an R sound, and so on. These basic sounds are called phonemes, and the ability to manipulate them is called phonological awareness. Many researchers now believe that for children with reading disorders, the problem has to do with impaired phonological awareness. Such children may know what a cat is and be able to describe it in detail, but when it comes to sounding out the written word cat, the parts of their brains responsible for processing phonemes just don't work as well as they should. Many reading disorders seem to have nothing to do with intelligence. Albert Einstein was dyslexic, and he turned out to be pretty bright. The good news is that, with proper training, nearly all children can learn to read with proficiency. And that, as we know, is fundamental.
This is the end of Listening Comprehension.